Welcome to the N1 Podcast, where you'll get an inside look at stories from the Clemson MBA team,
as well as entrepreneurs and innovators from Greenville, South Carolina, and beyond.
Brought to you by the Five for Innovation Hub at the Clemson University MBA program.
Welcome to N1. This is Jamie Patterson, sitting in my home office dreaming of the Pfeiffer Innovation Hub at Greenville One, which we will get back to eventually in our beautiful studio. But I am now here via WebEx, and I'm so excited to introduce you to two of our guests today. I'm going to start with our first guest, Jacob Kirby. Jacob Kirby is a 2018 graduate of the Clemson MBA program. He's a senior associate with RVR Consulting Group. And I just need to give you a plug before I let you start talking about yourself, Jacob. Jacob did everything while he was in the program. So he was student body president. He was part of a finance club. He did the Oxford program to study abroad. And then that wasn't enough for international business. He needed to do a full year in France. So Jacob, thank you so much for joining us. Did I get all that right?
I think that was perfect. Yeah, made me sound really good. But no, thank you so much for having us.
No, it's amazing. You know, there are some people that you just can go through and you've memorized their resume. I was so proud to see you take advantage of all of these opportunities and to see what you're doing now as a senior associate in the consulting world is just amazing. And it's just a proud moment for me from the Clemson MBA standpoint. So welcome and tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So I really appreciate you inviting us on. It's been a wild ride since Clemson. You know, I went to Paris for a year, did my Master of International Business over at ESA School of Management, and then was really trying to figure out how to get back to the U.S. and where I wanted to go. And Florida seemed like it had really good weather, so and a lot of good jobs. So, yeah, I jumped off and went to work for a large bank in Orlando. Only stayed there for a few months, but then I got the opportunity at RVR Consulting Group. And it's a full-service management consulting firm. Have 50-plus clients focused on the small to mid-sized market. We do a lot of mergers and acquisitions and things like that that I've been really interested in for a long time. So it's been a great experience. I've really, really enjoyed it and been there for about a year and a half now. So it's going really well.
That's amazing. And you were so kind to loop in our second guest. Eric Okamoto is here, and he is the chief operating officer from Boodle AI with an amazing background in strategy, technology, entrepreneurship, consulting. So I'm just so thrilled to have you here to join us. An MBA from Cambridge, undergrad, at West Point. So we are just thrilled to have you join us and for you to take the time. So tell us a little bit more about you.
Thanks, Jamie. Glad to be here and thanks for having me. A little bit about me. As you mentioned, I started out life at West Point. I've never really had a career. I've always gotten, bored after a few years, and I left the Army, I left the management consulting world, I jumped into international development, did that for a bit, left that to be an entrepreneur and co-found and be the CEO of a company called Boodle AI, which is a predictive analytics machine learning company in the nonprofit fundraising space. I actually just left that a couple months ago, and I'm working on my next startup. Which I'm not going to go into too much detail because we're in a race to be first to market. So we're in, I hate to say it, stealth mode, because stealth mode sounds so cheesy, but that's where we are right now.
I love it. I won't pressure you to tell us anymore, but I am just going to wish you all the best. But I love stealth mode. That's not cheesy at all.
It's so frequently used for stuff when people aren't, they're still, in ideation, but we're building it. It's on its way. You'll hear more about this in and out.
Well, I love that. And I love how your experience is kind of built on itself and just this entrepreneurial spirit that I hear within everything that you're doing, which is really cool because I think that a lot of our students have that spirit, whether they're in our entrepreneurship program or they're in our corporate program, and they just want to do something with that spirit in the corporate world, in their company, or maybe they want to work in corporate for a while and then eventually transition into launching their own company. So I think that they will find your advice interesting. So one of the reasons I initially reached out to Jacob is because he was releasing these really great articles through RVR Consulting Group about what we're dealing with today. So we are in this unprecedented time. We kind of have all been thrown into this new world of work. But something that's interesting about you both is this new world of work for so many people is kind of what you've been doing for is working remotely. So first and foremost, I just want to check in on both of you. How are you doing? How are you managing everything that's happening right now in your teams?
Yeah, I'll start. I mean, it's been a sudden transition. I've actually never worked remotely full time. I've done it some off and on, but this is the first time that I've really had to do it every day. It's been kind of cool, really. I mean, the first few days I was going really stir crazy, and then I kind of got into that routine. And, you know, I feel like I'm able to be more productive in a way. I miss having the camaraderie of coworkers, and, you know, we have a really close team at RVR. So I really miss seeing them all the time, but we're doing a lot of Zoom and WebEx meetings and, you know, get to see each other's faces a lot still. So we still have that kind of office banner going, but then I also get that 2 hour block of time or whatever, where I get to really focus and get a lot of stuff done. So it's been kind of cool for me. I've enjoyed it a lot.
Nice. Good. So you've been taking advantage of the opportunity.
Yeah, you can go do a workout during the middle of the day if you want to, you know, take a little break. So those kind of things. I really like the flexibility there.
Well, good. Eric, how about you?
I feel like that's a response I hear a lot for people without children. To be clear, this is not my standard remote work life because my two older boys are normally gone through the day. So the adjustment for me has not been remote work. It's been actually having the kids at home, which has been a degree of pain that is not encountered in normal, just remote teams. That said, also, the isolation is more pronounced right now because, for example, I've been working remotely for over 4 years, and we have a really strong circle of friends that we get together with frequently. So I have my social life outside of work, you know, more than I do in work, and not having that has been tough, but we're getting by and doing well. And all in all, it's been a very easy transition for me.
Well, that's great to hear. So I know one of the first articles that was released through your group was how to effectively transition to remote work. And it sounds like, Jacob, you're living this, right? As you're putting out these articles, you're figuring this out for yourself. So what's the best advice to effectively transition to remote
work? I mean, really, it's first recognizing that remote work is a legitimate option. You know, you can actually improve productivity a lot with working remotely. I think the other thing is really just getting the setup right. I mean, we talk about that more in the third blog post that comes out, should come out today or tomorrow. But really getting that setup where you have all your monitors and your everything. I mean, a lot of people kind of had that, you know, last second, like, oh, goodness, now we're working remotely. All I have is my laptop, you know, and I had to go back to the office and get all my monitors and everything set up. So I think now at this point, a lot of people do have that set up and just having the right lighting and the right atmosphere to be able to remove distractions from your life. I mean, that's probably the hardest part working remotely is you have the TV and the couch sitting right there. So it's easy to just to turn it on. But for me, I don't turn on the TV at all until 5 o'clock or after. I mean, it doesn't come on at all. So try to remove distractions like that. And that helps a lot.
That's great. And Eric, how about you? So you've been doing this for a while, transitioned 4 years ago.
For me, when I first started doing it, building up the routines to really make it very simple and make it so that you're not distracted. You're doing things like taking breaks when you need to, you're setting boundaries, you're really operating in a way that allows you to learn to be disciplined if you don't have that self-discipline already. And that, for me, that was having a space away from the living room, you know, away from the kids. It was about having the right eco-friendly setup. And it was about really, you know, I don't touch Facebook during the day. I don't touch TV during the day. I don't. In fact, I would say I'm more disciplined now than I ever was when I worked in office.
That's what's so interesting about all of this, too, is that you really have to have that self-discipline, because I don't know about you, but having two small children at home, too, you are kind of balancing between, okay, I have this set work time. We have homeschooling going on. That's like the whole new world for all of us. And then two, having to still meet the needs of our customers, of our employees, and making sure that everyone is still very much engaged and taken care of. So even just that connection level, I mean, I hear you talk about that connection level from a social standpoint too. So how are you trying to bridge that through these kind of remote meetings and opportunities?
Yeah, for me, I think a lot of people have been doing this, but I've had like happy hours with, I've just gotten random groups of friends together. So you know how social I am and that I like to see people and go out and, you know, always really involved in the community and do things like that. So the only way that we've really been able to maintain that to a certain extent was just getting groups together. So, I mean, like my fraternity class, we haven't all gotten together in probably 8 or 9 years, you know, from college. And we got together last week, and it was just great to see everybody again. And just a really big mood boost. And we've done the same thing with our company as well. And Eric has had a great point as far as having water coolers and having 3 or 4 employees getting together to just kind of talk about anything but work. So we're implementing that right now as well. So there's just some different things that the video conferencing definitely helps a lot, but you know, you miss that social aspect, and that those isolation issues are a really real issue. I mean, the first 3 or 4 days that I was working remotely, I thought I was going crazy, because you know, at that point I hadn't had those routines set up and the different ways to go out and see people. So, you know, after having a few days to kind of figure it out, then we started setting up these meetings and having a good time that way. So that's helped a lot.
I love that water cooler idea.
Yeah. What I realized as someone along the journey of building a remote team is that I was always on calls. So as the head boss, like I was always interacting with employees, customers, everything. And, you know, I didn't realize how much social interaction I was getting. Mm-hmm. Compared to the lowest level employees in the company who were getting very little. And once it kind of dawned on me via some feedback, I instituted some policies around, you know, water cooler Fridays, 30 minutes set aside. And I set up tables where it's, you know, you get together with 3 to 4, preferably not on your own team, and talk about anything you want to. The Netflix show you're watching, the news events, whatever, but don't talk about work. And the intent there is, you know, don't just make it a, you know, don't talk about like the project you're working on, but do it more about a social. Also did a lot of, you know, I used to insist on all managers do one-on-ones. And a lot of that was just about, you know, making sure that if not daily, at least minimum weekly, you're interacting with every employee. So again, the lower level employees, those are the ones that are going to feel very isolated in a remote work environment. On top of that, happy hours, we did brown bags, we did all sorts of stuff that just brought the team together, you know, like a regular work environment. It was totally virtual.
Yeah, I think it's amazing. And again, I mean, I've said this where it's like we've had this technology for a while, but I haven't used it until I was forced to. And now I think it's going to be really interesting to potentially see how the world of work changes, which we're going to get to in a little bit, because I'd love to get both of your opinions, obviously from a management consulting side too. But in terms of managers right now, so that's another challenge as well. How do you effectively manage remote employees, especially employees that have never done this before? This is a whole new animal, right? It's not just managing remote employees. Yeah. It's managing people that have never had the option or opportunity to work remotely before.
I started the hiring process. I used to ask every person I hired, have you ever worked remotely before? And about, 50% of the time they said no. And I said, let me tell you something. I can only judge you by your performance. I cannot see when you start your day, how much you're working, and when you finish your day. Are you comfortable with that? And that actually scares a lot of people. People not see, not having their boss see how much they're, how many hours they're putting in the day scares people.
Right.
So I made it about performance-based. It was basically what you're delivering, what, how you're performing. And I did not care when people, went for a run in the middle of the day, went to the grocery store, did whatever. They just had to capture it in Slack so that we knew they were offline. And, and I did the same. I did the same to make sure to, and tell employees it's okay to not, to be away from your desk and to go do something, but get your work done. And you have to be very clear about expectations there.
Well, I love that from a leadership perspective, because I know it, that happens with vacation time sometimes too. Like, I know some organizations where they've had to pull in senior managers to say, when you are on vacation, do not email your team, because that sets the precedence that when your team, when the people that report to you are on vacation, that they're supposed to be emailing and working too, but they need a clean break. So I love that, if you want to go take a run in the middle of the day, you're like, it's fun, it's good, especially because we're not leaving our houses right now. So I've talked to some people where they're like, it's really funny that, I'm working at my desk in my home office all week, and then I walk down the steps on Saturday and there's my office, but it's the weekend and I'm still here. And so kind of having that, we talked about having that routine, but also figuring out what that balance looks like. And I think it needs to come from the top down. So Eric, I applaud you for that. I think that's amazing. Jake, how about you?
Yeah. I really think the biggest shift for most managers right now is you really have to be a lot more proactive in communication. Mm-hmm. Before it was easy to just stop by somebody's desk or whatever and say, hey, we need to set up this meeting for such and such or whatever. And, how's this project coming along? And so now you have to make sure your employees are communicating with you, but you also have to be more proactive as far as setting those times up and being a little bit more structured with your schedule. I think that's probably the biggest change from traditional management that now you have to adjust for. So really just about being a lot more proactive and reaching out to your employees and making sure that they don't feel left out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what I found to be really interesting, and I'd love to get your opinion on this, is that in the workplace, we typically don't go in and, we're social with our coworkers, but we don't really go deep into like, how are you doing? Are you handling everything okay? Right. But I feel like that's something, I start every conversation now with, are you okay? Is your family okay? How is everything going? So this has almost given us an opportunity to form deeper bonds in terms of, just checking on our coworkers, checking on the people that report to us.
Absolutely. I think it's, you're just more conscious of it, I guess, in this environment. And it's also the whole coronavirus and lockdown, everything about it. Everyone's, it's good to check on everyone you're working with, everyone you're talking to. But we're in uncharted territory here, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's really interesting, too. You kind of get a glimpse into people's home lives more, which is maybe not the best thing for work all the time, but at the same time, you build better bonds with people. And I think you kind of get to know coworkers better almost in a way and see a different side of them a little bit. So I think that's pretty cool to be able to do.
No, it is so funny. I was on a call with a student the other day and, I'm like, well, welcome to my house. Right. And thankfully I will say, if my husband hears this, he'll probably laugh, but I'm thankful for my husband for having all these crazy, like framed Clemson football ticket championship things, because it's great for my office now. Yeah. It definitely fits, you know, fits the theme of what I'm doing. So I laugh. I'm like, you know, I've complained about these ugly, you know, framed tickets and programs, but it's making it work for working from home.
I've been doing like a Clemson background or an Auburn background a lot for my Zoom background, and it always kind of, you know, increases the rapport with people. You can kind of talk about something else, and they see where they might not have known where, you know, where I graduated and that sort of thing. So they always have, you know, you start talking about football or whatever, and it's pretty interesting. So you develop a different side of a relationship with clients and all that too.
Absolutely.
I can always tell too when I have Zoom calls where people have been working home for years, because especially like certain consultants or people in sales, or, you know, that are trying to convey a persona that's large, because you'll often see some very impressive business books on right behind them, or, you know, books like great leadership books, and then their college diploma and everything, you know, and you're like, okay, this is a studio. This is your studio that you're conveying a persona. Yeah, I
really
still
funny.
Have kids, you know, pictures on my, yeah.
Listen, I've got rainbows and unicorns all, but to my defense as well, if you come to my office in Greenville One, I've got rainbows and unicorns there too.
Very good.
You are what you are. So in terms of, I know the next piece that you talk about, Jacob, is effectively utilizing the technology to work remotely. So talk to us about how you're doing that, even just from reaching out to clients and still continuing your day-to-day work, you know, outside of just your own individual teams.
Yeah, so the toughest thing for us really in this time is really the business development side. So we've done a lot of word of mouth type of business development in the past. We've been changing that over the past probably year or so. But now, you know, we're utilizing the technology, and luckily so many more people are open to it because they've been forced to. So we're able to set up a lot more business development type meetings virtually, instead of trying to go, you know, meet for a coffee or meet for lunch or something like that. So we've been trying to utilize the Zoom and WebEx that way to have those face-to-face business development sales types of calls. But yeah, I mean, there's so many other tools too that we talk about really in the third blog post that you can really use to augment the tools that every company really has right now. I mean, everybody has the Zoom, WebEx, Slack, Microsoft Teams. Really learning how to utilize those to the full extent of that they can be utilized, I think is really big. And then there's add-on tools like DocuSign, HelloSign, DocuSend, that are, you know, really good document management tools. So we're able to send out contracts and be able to have a lot better remote work environment, you know, as far as being able to not have a printer and a scanner on your homework desk and all that. So I think those types of things are really useful to have right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, in short, I mean, I think I always took the view of how easy are you making it for your employees to communicate, you know, collaborate, innovate, and not just within their own team, but across teams. And part of that, in my view, is not just about putting these tools in place, but also when we use Slack a lot. And using Slack, it can, if someone's not managing that information architecture and the channels and everything around how people can find information or convey information to appropriate people, it can get messy. So it's just like having too many meetings in a company where, you know, it's overloading people. Someone has to own the information architecture. Usually, in my case, it was me, but someone in the company that, and that, according to like Peter Thiel, I think it's Peter Thiel, 0-1, you know, that's an executive responsibility. You know, getting people to communicate and collaborate will drive the performance of your organization even higher.
But even just from a hiring standpoint, so Eric, it sounds like you have hired remotely, and that's nothing new for you. What advice do you have for some of these companies and some of these organizations that they are having to kind of implement new strategies for hiring and onboarding through remote channels now and through technology?
I will say hiring very junior employees to work remotely. I did that one time, and it worked out great. But in general, I always tried to hire more senior people who had done it before. But what I was able to do was, you know, I took the form of Google employee who, when his wife went to business school and Google said, well, you can do the 2-hour commute down to Boston if you want to, he said, not doing it. And so he actually took less pay to be able to work from home and not have a 2-hour commute every day, 4-hour commute both ways. It gave me access to some of the best engineers in America, best big data people, best machine learning people, without paying the prices you pay in a Silicon Valley, New York, Boston. Which was huge. Likewise, even the customer success, salespeople, the people that, you know, straight out of college are asking for $50,000, $60,000 New York City. You know, when you hire them in small town America, it's a, you're hiring them for a fraction of that. Not a fraction, but less for sure.
Sure. Well, it's a good point. You can build your team. And as you said, when you introduced yourself at the beginning, your team is all over the world. So do you think, I mean, going forward, organizations have now realized, oh, I can do this too, because, you know, we've kind of gone on business as usual because we were forced to. So, I mean, what do you think this is going to be kind of a trend going forward for some organizations that maybe have never thought before that you could manage a team all over the world potentially?
It's going to be a trend that the markets will drive them there, because you have entrepreneurs like myself and people who are thinking remotely that are going to undercut the market, because they're going to have people that they're going to be able to manage, get great performance out of, not just in the US, but globally. And if they can't compete with that, they're going to be undercut, and they're going to have new technologies that disrupt the markets they're in. So fundamentally, I mean, I think this is the way of the future. It's going to only increase in that direction. I mean, that's why you have sites like Upwork and TopTal that are bringing talented people from all over the world to bear. I did a complete rebranding via 99 Designs, and the winner, who did better than, I would say, New York ad agencies, was a mom in Macedonia.
I love it.
And she was amazing. And she did it for like probably 30th of what the New York, you know, ad agencies were asking us, you know, charging us. And for all I know, those New York ad agencies are getting the work from the mom in Macedonia and just, you know, tacking on a huge profit margin.
Well, I think that's such a good point. There's so much talent everywhere, but it's how do you tap into it and find this talent? And using this technology, I think, is such an effective way of extending your reach.
Mm-hmm. So now go ahead, Jacob.
I was just going to say, yeah, I mean, you think about my generation, we either want to have a really cool office or we want to be able to work from anywhere. So I think the work from anywhere movement and really be something long-term that, you know, that a lot of companies can attract a lot of employees that way that are super high talent, but they don't want to move to wherever the company headquarters is or whatever. Maybe they have their family already there in small town America or wherever, you know, and they want to be able to stay there. They don't want to uproot their whole family. So that trend can really be a long-term thing going forward.
I think that the change management side of this is really, it's not for the workers or the people getting stuff done, more for the management level. Like those kind of older managers who are used to kind of watching when their employees come in, when they leave, how long their lunch break is, this is hard for them. This is really hard for them. But you know what? I was one of those guys too. And I learned to do it remotely because my wife did not want to leave Florida. And I convinced my partners we were going to build a remote team. So anyone can do it.
No, it's so true. And that is always a funny thing when I meet with our students. Sometimes it come, you know, right in from undergrad and they're like, I don't want to work 9 to 5. And I don't know what they think that means, but I'm like, don't worry, you won't. You'll be probably working like 24 hours a day. Just because, and I don't mean that in such a negative way, but, you know, I know right now, I mean, I come downstairs and turn my computer on at 7 a.m. and I crank out hopefully an hour and a half before my kids wake up. And then, you know, you do, you're kind of in between these breaks, and I might shut down about 8 o'clock at night. And I'm not saying that's the way to do it, but, you know, throughout the day you're in and out and doing different things. So I really think too, and going back to technology, even before this crisis, of the fact that, you know, we all have our phones that we're connected to, that people can reach us at all hours. We can receive emails, and that's really up to us. That's what, when we go back to that conversation about work-life balance, that's something when you have the support of your boss that you have to really create, you know, through what works for you. And it's so different for everybody else. And yeah, it has changed from just making sure that you're sitting at your desk, right, from 9 to 5. And it's like, there's a difference to being here visibly versus doing the work. That's why I love what you were talking about with your team, is that it's more so about the productivity than the amount of hours you're putting in.
Yeah, I read an interesting article this morning that was basically saying, because so many companies and managers are struggling with the ability to manage remote teams, because it's just new to them and they're not trained in that, you know, in terms of what Jacob talked about earlier, managing expectations, clear communications, they don't know how to work that way. There's been a rise in surveillance technologies. And so their answer to that is, in the remote world, I'm going to put a little thing on your computer that sees when all your apps are open and how active you are and if you're typing. That's the wrong answer in my book, because if you've got to, like, you know, have some surveillance to watch your employees work, then they're gonna figure out how to get around that. And you're not really being clear about what your expectations and how you're managing performance.
Well, and yeah, talk about building trust. That's probably not the best way to build trust with your team, is to put, you know, basically a tracker on them. Yeah, so,
exactly.
And that's the thing that I always go back to, you know, it's like you hire people for a reason. And as a manager, you've got to figure out how you can trust, and you've got to be able to let go a little bit to be able to trust that, listen, you hired this person. What's the difference whether you physically see them for 8 hours a day, or, you know that they're remotely doing the same work. And potentially, to Jacob's point, maybe being a little bit more effective in terms of getting stuff done. I know, you know, typically working from home, I can be a little bit more kind of head down when it's certain, if I'm writing or if I'm needing to do research on something, less distraction and less interruptions. So really, I feel like trust is a huge piece of that.
Absolutely. In fact, there's a great book called Remote. It's like Office Not Included, that I read when I started building up the team and looking for good ideas. And they talked about how the bigger risk when you have a high performing remote work team actually is not people slacking off, it's overwork.
Mm-hmm.
People work too much, and you got to tell them you're good, you know, reel it back. Don't work until late at night, which I used to work from early in the morning to late at night. Yeah, I go to the gym during the day, I do stuff, but all in all, I put in a lot of hours work remotely. And it's just, over time, it wears on you.
Yeah.
And fatigue sets in, and you gotta put boundaries up, you gotta temper it a bit.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are in that boat right now trying to figure out what that looks like, for sure. So this has been super helpful. So in your opinion, you know, the future of work, Do you see larger organizations that have never had this opportunity before moving to more of a remote structure? What do you see now, after we've been thrown into this, as the future of work?
I very much think COVID-19 has driven technological transformation in ways that CIOs and CEOs and CTOs have been trying to do for years unsuccessfully. And they have thrusted companies into the remote work paradigm faster than anything any executive could have done. So I think now that we've turned that corner, you know, it's opened up workers' eyes, it's opened up managers' eyes, it's opened up everyone's eyes about the future. And that's going to change the industries for the better, in my opinion. What I think it's also going to mean is a shift in demographics. I think there's going to be a lot more, you know, that, you know, 24-year-old living in New York City, getting paid a good amount, but barely struggling month to month because their rent is three or four times what they'd pay in Greenville or what they'd pay in Florida. They're going to try to find a remote opportunity where they can live in a more cost-effective location. So it's going to change demographics, certainly. It's also going to change what I started seeing and what I've seen in communities around the U.S., especially tech communities. Networks build up, like meetup networks and things that allow people to have that kind of tacit knowledge exposure that may not always be available via work, but it builds up in your community. And so there's going to be a lot more of that, a lot more social interaction outside of work as more people work remotely. And frankly, companies that kind of ignore the remote work trends, I think they're going to struggle. Mm-hmm. Especially when it's like, you know, white collar professional work. I mean, no way around it in certain industries, but companies that struggle to offer this as an employee perk or benefit are going to struggle.
Absolutely. Jacob, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think Eric hit the nail on the head. But yeah, I mean, every crisis, there's some companies that get weeded out and some companies that shoot up from it. I think the ones that really adapt to the remote work are going to really be able to develop some competitive advantages now. And a lot of smaller companies are now going to realize that they can actually work remotely for pretty cheap. And, you know, they can start hiring this workforce that maybe they didn't have access to before. So I think there's going to be a little bit of shift, like Eric was saying, as far as different employees with different talent levels coming to smaller companies or coming to companies that are allowing remote work. And it's going to really, you know, give some companies an advantage. But the ones that remain archaic, they're going to struggle there. So I think it's going to be interesting. Every industry is going to be hit in a different way, and some will be able to take advantage of it. Some industries, you know, really can't work remotely, so that's going to be tough. You know, if we have a second wave of this pandemic, or you know, if this becomes a semi-regular thing, you know, that's always going to be an issue. But it'll change supply chains a lot. It'll change, you know, I don't know if just-in-time inventory is going to be as big of a thing. Maybe people start stockpiling a little bit more and having a little bit of a buffer with inventory levels, you know, from the manufacturing standpoint. But yeah, it's definitely going to change a lot of industries in different ways. And I think, you know, overall, it's going to be a shift for the good. You know, people are going to become more competitive and be able to take advantage of it. So I think it can be a good thing coming out of it.
Yeah, no, I appreciate your thoughts on that, because again, this is uncharted territory, and it's going to be interesting to see. I just read an article this morning that Mark Cuban was just talking about the recovery after this, how it's not going to be pretty. And, you know, a few weeks ago, and this is all changing week to week, and it's a few weeks ago, people were saying, oh, it's going to be easy because this isn't like, you know, there was a fundamental issue in the economy like there was in 08 and 09. But now we're really seeing weeks later that, you know, this isn't just going to be a once there's a vaccine, we're just going to bounce back, or once everything opens back up, we're just going to bounce back. I think people are going to be a little more cautious too going forward. So it'll be interesting just to see the response in general.
Absolutely. I mean, I think even if the country totally opens up, there's going to be a segment of the population that's still going to be reluctant to go into movie theaters, going to gyms. It's going to change all these industries in ways that enable new markets, new opportunities in terms of how people achieve the same outcomes, whether it's work, physical fitness, entertainment, team building, collaboration, but it's going to be done more through technology. And so many things that I want to work on right now, you know, talking to friends and partners, and it's, they're like every, you know, Jacob said, every crisis brings an opportunity. And I suspect, coming out of this, because the U.S. is, in my opinion, the most innovative, dynamic country in the world, we're going to do better in the long run because we're going to develop the capabilities, the technologies, the companies that are going to take us into, you know, the next decade and beyond.
Yeah, Yes. Well, I know I have to let you guys go, but I do want to ask you one question before I let you go. Just because so many people are struggling right now and having a really hard time, and I'm trying to stay on the positive side of life, which is what I try to do. So I'm asking our guests, what has brought you joy during this crisis that you haven't really done before? Like, I'll just give you an example so that you could follow me on this. I was never a big social media person, and I'm still not. I do not post. However, you know, like a lot of musical artists are doing these like live shows, or zoos are doing these at-home safaris. And so to make people that are, you know, we're all isolated, to make you feel more connected, having my dog warm my feet right now as I'm talking to you is bringing me joy. So what have you found? What joy have you found in this crazy world that we're living in right now?
Yeah, I was actually going to bring up the dog thing. So I have a golden retriever, and yeah, I mean, it's going and enjoying the simple things again. I mean, you don't have to go out to a nice restaurant or whatever to have fun, or go to a bar or whatever, you know. Now, you know, I'm enjoying just walking my dog around the neighborhood and just kind of being outside and trying to enjoy that kind of stuff more. So it kind of takes a step back a little bit and kind of realize what's important and how to enjoy things a little bit easier. So
I will say we used to order food or eat out a lot, and I am finding my inner chef. I've been cooking a lot.
I love it.
I started watching Chef's Table because I'm just fascinated by different ingredients, and for once, instead of just popping stuff in the microwave, I'm taking the time to, you know, cut my own stuff and really prepare it. So I'm really enjoying that side of it.
I love that you're finding your inner chef. I'm still finding my inner ice cream lover, and I need to stop because I have found that this staying at home thing has made me eat a lot more ice cream than usual.
The COVID-20, that's what they're going
to
be calling this.
I know. Oh, believe me, I've heard, you know, you've heard about the freshman 15. Well, how about the COVID-20? So, and who knows, I guess we'll see when we wear real work clothes again. But truly, Jacob and Eric, thank you so very much for your time and for your expertise on all of these topics. I think it's really great to be able to talk through a lot of this stuff because it is so new to so many people and having to adjust to it. So I love that you were able to share from your experiences, and I appreciate that so much. And thank you for listening, everyone in our N1 audience. I hope you stay well. Take care, and we'll talk soon. Have a magical day.
This episode was produced by the Clemson University MBA program and sponsored by the Pfeiffer Innovation Hub.
Thanks for listening to the Clemson MBA in One podcast. Hear more stories at www.clemson.edu/MBA/podcast.